was carried out by an individual, not a faith, not a culture, not an ethnicity.
New Zealand faces terrorism. It's Monday, September 6th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We're online. You can find us at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, confidence for Thailand's prime minister. Focus on diplomacy in Afghanistan. Paralympics conclude. Remembering 9/11. It's all on today's VOA Asia. New Zealand Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern says a terrorist attack at a shopping mall in Auckland was inspired by the Islamic State group. The attacker, a Sri Lankan national who was wielding a knife, was shot dead by the police. There were several injuries, as we hear more from Sydney with Phil Mercer.
New Zealand Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern said the attacker had been under surveillance before he began his rampage at a supermarket in Auckland, the country's biggest city. Ardern says he was shot dead by the police within 60 seconds of the attack starting.
What happened was despicable. It was hateful. It was wrong. It was carried out by an individual, not a faith, not a culture, not an ethnicity, but an individual person who was gripped by ideology that is not supported here.
Videos posted online have shown panicked shoppers running out of the supermarket before the sound of gunfire was heard. The man, a Sri Lankan national, arrived in New Zealand a decade ago, was identified as a national security threat in 2016, and was under constant monitoring. The Prime Minister said his violent ideology was inspired by the Islamic State terrorist group. But although he had reportedly been arrested on suspicion of plotting a terror attack in 2020 and later cleared by a judge, Ardern said there was no legal reason to keep him in custody. Kate Hanna, an extremism research fellow at Auckland University, told Radio New Zealand the man was most probably radicalised online.
This person most likely has been in that kind of echo chamber for a period of time. He first came to, potentially since then, has been exposed to this kind of material that's caused him to go down this path.
Analysts have warned that the attack will be a painful reminder for New Zealanders of the deadly mosque attacks in Christchurch in March 2019. It was the South Pacific nation's worst terror attack. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
You may find more on this and all of our stories by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia, on Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, and YouTube. Also stop by the voanews.com website. These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. With China more assertive, Taiwan mulls bigger defense budget. Thai Prime Minister survives no confidence vote. U.S. climate envoy Kerry gets cold shoulder in China. New Zealand tried to deport a tax suspect for years after he arrived as a refugee. Highly indebted Chinese companies pose challenge for Beijing. You'll find much more on these stories with expanded coverage on Facebook, VOA Asia, Instagram, and Twitter, and the voanews.com website. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Let's continue with VOA Asia. Thai Prime Minister Prayuth Chan-o-cha survived a no-confidence vote Saturday in Parliament over his handling of the coronavirus, prompting members of the pro-democracy movement to vow to raise the stakes by using protests to voice their discontent. We hear more from Durora Dundee.
Thai Prime Minister Prayuth Chan-o-cha survives a no-confidence vote in Parliament, and immediately protesters flood the streets. Thailand is gripped by a political crisis. The unpopular former army chief Prayuth refuses to bend to a pro-democracy movement that is extremely unhappy with his seven-year tenure. Their anger is made worse by an economy in ruins, not seen since the 1997 Asian financial crisis. Protesters say the government's handling of the latest wave of the coronavirus pandemic is the final straw. More than 12,000 Thais have died since April. yet just 13% of the population is fully vaccinated against COVID-19. Priyut defended his work and beat back Saturday's motion to have him removed from office, thanks to a parliament stuffed with allies of the royalist military.
Thailand was one of the first countries hit by the COVID storm. Let me assure you that although Thailand might not be the best country in its handling of the pandemic, we're definitely not the worst.
The young protesters insist, however, there's nothing he can do but resign. They say Thailand needs major surgery to the entire political body to make it a more equal and less repressive society. This includes curbs on the powers of the monarchy, a once unassailable institution headed by King Mahavishnu, who is one of the world's richest monarchs. But Priyut's political survival is kindling anger among his critics.
Inside or outside parliament doesn't make any difference when they're holding all the power. When they cling on to power like this and the parliament is not an answer, all we can do is take to the streets.
On Saturday, thousands tried to reach embassies in Bangkok's commercial heart to embarrass the government in front of the global community. Some protesters believe their struggle is moving into a new and potentially dangerous phase. More so, as clashes with police are already a near-nightly occurrence.
Nothing works anymore. You can't try to reform every system in every institution. It won't work. Taking to the streets is the only way. Even non-violence won't work against this dictatorship regime. I can't just sit and watch. I had to come out and protest. And everyone else should too.
The tension is at boiling point in Thailand. The question now being asked is just how long can the impasse continue between Priyut and the people? Wichitra Dungdi for VOA News, Bangkok.
Still ahead on VOA Asia, a shift in the approach to Afghanistan. Happening now in Asia, North Korean state TV said the country's leader, Kim Jong-un, ordered officials to wage a tougher pandemic prevention campaign in, quote, our style, after he turned down foreign COVID-19 vaccine offered through the UN-backed immunization program. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. It's nice to start out a brand new week with you on VOA Asia. Although U.S. military involvement in Afghanistan has ended, U.S. officials say there are still diplomatic and economic options for protecting the rights of Afghans under Taliban rule. VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson explores.
The Taliban now in full control of the Kabul airport and almost all of Afghanistan. But the Taliban faces challenges as the women of Afghanistan demand respect for their human rights, protesting here in the streets of Herat. And a serious drought sweeps the country, raising questions about how the country will sustain itself without significant international aid. The U.S. has not recognized the Taliban as the official government of Afghanistan.
No one is saying from the federal government, no one, the president, secretary of defense, no one from the intelligence community, that the Taliban are good actors, right? We are not saying that. That is one of the reasons we are being so clear that we are not rushing to recognition.
The U.S. is working to reopen Afghan airports and redirect aid to directly assist the Afghan people. U.S. government aid to Afghanistan is under review. The U.S. State Department said dependent on the formation of a new Afghan government.
What we will be looking to when it comes to the issues that you've raised, including the potential for any forms of assistance, will be the actions of any new Afghan government.
The U.S. says it has evacuated 124,000 people. But thousands more remain behind, fearing Taliban retribution. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Washington.
Now on VOA Asia, the Paralympics have come to a close with a final handful of inspiring events and a sigh of relief from Japanese organizers who successfully navigated COVID delays and outbreaks. Steve Ross joins us from Tokyo with more.
The Tokyo Paralympics came to the finish line with a vibrant closing ceremony featuring musicians and dancers of all abilities and the traditional procession of flags held high by winners and competitors from some 160 nations. The Tokyo Paralympics managed to complete 12 days of competition with no serious virus disruptions, this despite the host city being under a pandemic state of emergency order. The Games, delayed by a year due to COVID-19, helped to raise awareness and give a voice to 1.2 billion people around the world with disabilities. The Paralympics serve as an important eye-opener in Japan, where students with physical disabilities seldom join mainstream classrooms. As for COVID-19 at the Games, viral spread was kept in check. About 200 individuals related to the Paralympics were reported positive for the virus, but most were not athletes and their cases were not considered severe. For the world, access during the pandemic meant watching via high-definition television and streaming video. Pandemic precautions made the no-spectators decision a near necessity. But Paralympics partners gave sports coverage that continued the wide view already provided during the earlier Tokyo Olympics, which broadcast almost 9,500 hours, a 30% increase from Rio 2016 Olympics coverage. India, in particular, drawing attention at these games. Going into the Tokyo 2020 Paralympics, India had won 12 medals, including 4 golds, throughout the history of the games. A fortnight in Japan later, that tally is now at 31 medals. During the last day's competition, men's wheelchair basketball Team USA rolled to victory and back-to-back gold, beating Team Japan on the final day of Paralympic competition. Team USA, the defending gold medalists, battling the host nation team, making Japan's first Paralympic gold medal game appearance. The final score was USA 64, Japan 60. And bringing us back to one of the sports at the heart of Olympic and Paralympic history, the final day's T46 men's marathon, China took the gold, followed by Brazil and Japan. Thank you for joining us for this wrap-up of the Tokyo Paralympic Games. Steve Ross for VOA News, Tokyo.
All this week, VOA Asia remembers the events and effects of 9/11 as we approach the 20th anniversary on Saturday of the terror attack on the United States. In 2002, VOA's Kane Farabaugh, then a reporter for the U.S. military, visited Afghanistan in the early stages of America's 20-year presence in the country. As the United States ended its military engagement, Farabaugh followed up with those he had met in those early years to discuss the U.S. withdrawal and the mission's legacy.
The U.S. military had been in Afghanistan just a few months when I landed at Bagram Airfield in May of 2002 on a reporting assignment for the American Forces Network.
Major Brian Cole with the United States Army Reserve and the 489 Civil Affairs Battalion.
I met Brian Cole while distributing supplies at a recently reopened school shut down by the Taliban prior to the U.S. invasion. It's been more than 19 years since I met Cole in Afghanistan.
How y'all doing?
After some effort tracking him down, I learned he safely returned home. We reconnected in July at Fort Boonesboro, outside Lexington, Kentucky. Cole felt his unit's objectives were clear.
Our mission was to help two things, to gain support for us being there, and to put in water wells and things like that, and to help gain acceptance with the U.S. forces being there. And then also the bigger picture was to help gain support for the newly established Afghan government.
Cole says he made sacrifices to build a better Afghanistan, but that mission was never accomplished.
I think a better way to say it is the mission's over.
Cole says the legacy of the U.S. military in Afghanistan is best measured by what didn't happen.
We were able to keep similar 9/11 attacks from occurring, and I think they would have had we not gone.
Cole credits his interpreter with saving the lives of his fellow soldiers and his own.
What will you do if you can get him here?
Give him a place to live.
Cole still didn't know the status of his Afghan interpreter as the U.S. military presence in Afghanistan neared its conclusion. Kane Farabaugh, VOA News, Lexington, Kentucky.
That's our program for today. Thank you for joining us on VOA Asia. Continue online at Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. We also thank our team, Service Chief Diane Gao, Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, Amy Hybels, and Chris Cascao. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a wonderful day ahead. Be safe. Be well.